You're listening to a CNBC TV 18 podcast, and this is Smooth Ride. Hello and welcome. This is the Smooth Ride podcast, and I'm Alisha Sachdev. This is an episode we're doing after a bit of a hiatus. And in these times, even a single day is quite like a long leap when it comes to how fast technologies in the electric vehicle ecosystem are evolving. So while the product pie when it comes to vehicles itself keeps on growing, a fundamental challenge that OEMs also have to contend with in India is that we simply don't have the infrastructure to offer overnight charging solutions for a large number of our customers. Indian customers also don't like to or can't afford to pay for bigger and bigger batteries. So how does one truly scale EVs? Well, that's a question that Exponent Energy perhaps was asking itself when they were starting up. And the answer, they feel, is by building fast charging systems that can be deployed at scale without degrading the battery too much. My guest on the Smooth Ride podcast today is Arun Vinayak, co-founder of Exponent Energy and also the ex-chief product officer at Aether Energy. Arun is trying to make the grid and vehicle talk to each other much more seamlessly than they do today. Arun, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. You've launched Exponent Energy at a time electric vehicles have well and truly arrived in India, at least the two-wheelers have. And it is a conversation that started to get serious in any meaningful way only in the last 1 or 2 years.
You've spent 7 years with a very prominent electric two-wheeler maker. And recently then, you decided to start up Exponent Energy, where you say, and please excuse the pun, you will exponentially reduce battery degradation while fast charging. And that, you believe, is a critical problem to address. Because fast charging, of course, as we all know, and in my limited understanding of the science behind why this happens, I did try your website and you very nicely explained why battery degradation takes place and you're changing all of those things fundamentally. For our listeners, if you could, break this technology down and maybe start also with your vision, for the ecosystem space when we also talk about EVs. And what is Exponent Energy trying to create here and change when it comes to fast charging or other charging solutions?
Absolutely. Firstly, thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here. And I think you're right. We are at this tipping point where we're definitely going electric. I think I see this as one of the larger shifts, at least in the last 20 years. We had the dot-com shift, and then before that, you had the computers coming in. I think the EV revolution is one of the larger ecosystem shifts around the world and India that we're seeing. So it's wonderful to be part of the journey. It's also wonderful to see the journey happening around all of us. I think you're right. When we started Aether, it was a very lonely journey, 2013. Mm-hmm. No one believed in EVs. There was Tesla in the US, a bunch of startups around the world. And of course, we were in India saying, hey, we're going to build an electric scooter that's better than a petrol scooter. Most people didn't even believe that's possible back then, right? Of course, we truly believed in the power of EV and what it could do, not with respect to cost and going green, of course that's there, but in just taking vehicles to the next level of experience, right? It is an evolution. Right. And but fast forward from 2013, it took us a little longer at Aether to get there, but I think we eventually got there. We went through sort of the first people through the door, so a lot of blood on our nose with respect to how to build an R&D, like figuring out how to scale. The ecosystem obviously wasn't very ready and primed up to go electric back then. But all of that has changed. I think 2019, 2020, I started seeing all of India ready to go electric. Everyone now wants to build an electric vehicle, sell an electric vehicle, mm-hmm. finance an electric vehicle.
Right.
And it's great. I think India has always been great at manufacturing, distributions, financing, scale, etc. But mm-hmm. I think building the core technology has always been something we've relied externally upon. But I think with the EV revolution, there's an opportunity for us to be leaders in that space. Last time people started building vehicles, India wasn't even a free country, right? So we've always been followers in the vehicle space with respect to technology. With respect to computing. We played a catch-up game with respect to software, but again, with respect to services and et cetera. India's, I think, still getting used to and getting comfortable to start building products and start building technology. And I think if you really want to crack EVs for India, we need to build some of the core technology layers for India in India. Because India is a unique market with respect to its products that it needs, the sort of price point it needs, the sort of temperature conditions that we have. We have one of the worst grids in the world. All of this put together, building EVs in India is a huge challenge. And at Xponent, what are we doing? I think it's fair to say that the 0-to-1 shift in EVs is done. Everyone now believes, 2013 people thought EVs are for the old guy to go buy groceries, not more than 25 to 25. Right? That was the image, right? And EVs were built that very sort of, hey, it's green, so please buy us. That was really the value prop. Right? But that's changed. People now know that EVs are faster, more torque, EVs are sexier, they've got lesser cost of operation. So everyone believes that. No one's doubting that anymore across all segments. May it be a two-wheeler, may it be a four-wheeler passenger vehicle, may it be a commercial vehicle. So the 0-to-1 shift is done because EVs drive better. The supply chain around motors, batteries, that's established. But the energy side is what's complicated, and it's very fragmented and very broken, right? Everything about, hey, how long does it take to charge my battery? How long will my battery last if I charge it? Where do I charge my battery? How much do I pay for this? Absolutely. All of these questions remain unanswered. Right. Fundamentally, because people build technology in isolation. There are a lot of people who buy charging stations that set it up, and you have charging operators who then wait for vehicles to come. But then you also have batteries that are built, which takes 8 hours to charge. So all of this put together means, and if I just draw an energy flow map, right? I mean, there's energy in the grid that flows to the charger, and then the charger flows to the battery, and from the battery flows to the motor and the wheel. The battery to the motor and the wheel, that problem is solved. And that's something that OEMs want to own, and they're going to keep differentiating and keep innovating on. And they want complete control on that, right? And it's fair. Creators control, right? But the problem is, and there's infinite energy on the grid, but the problem is energy doesn't seem to flow from the grid to the vehicle seamlessly and efficiently. That's what we're fixing. We're simplifying energy. So all of India can go electric ASAP. OEMs can leverage the technology that we've built and the network that we're building out so that the vehicles can recharge like a refuel in less than 15 minutes. We also ensure that batteries last at least 3,000 cycles. We actually ensure they last 4,000, 5,000 cycles. We provide a 3,000 cycle warranty to ensure these batteries are far better financeable, and which means energy is now cheaper, energy is simpler, energy is instantaneous in the EV world. So we can all go electric without worrying about the shackles of charging.
Awesome. And it's a problem I recognize very intimately also when I speak to customers. So, you know, I mean, sure that there's only two ways that they look at it. Is the battery removable, swappable, or how do I charge this? Sure, someone will come and install a charger at my place and that should take care of things. But when it comes to actually the energy flowing from the grid to the vehicle, I think we're all lost. And the questions are actually not addressed in as streamlined a way as they should be. And while it's fair, like you said, for OEMs to build this proprietary, you know, sort of technology for charging and all those kind of things, for the customers, it may be a bit confusing. They haven't seen anything else. They don't know, what they should be optimizing for when they go and buy a product. I wouldn't know myself. So one of the things that you mentioned, and, we saw this tweet by Amitabh Kant that also blew up, about Xponent Energy, where... the headline sort of read that it will be a 15-minute fast charging solution, I believe less than 15 minutes, on a wide range of battery cells. How do you enable that? And what is the plank that this claim is resting on? And then the simplification also that you spoke of, how does it take place? Explain it to a lay person. If I'm going out today to buy, an electric vehicle, what... do I need to know in terms of, the things that I should be looking for in my battery, the things I should be asking for, in terms of access to a power source? I don't even know what are the right questions to ask right now. So how are you simplifying this, and how do I know that this is an important thing for me to know?
Right. So before you get into the charging and everything else, I think if you're buying an electric vehicle, you sort of want to test ride it first. A lot of electric vehicles claim top speed, top performance, a lot of large specs. The thing with electric vehicles is it can give you that much power for maybe two minutes or 30 minutes or an hour, depending on how well it's in.
Right. And so that's the power can drop. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. So a lot of EV OEMs tend to play a sort of a marketing game there. So, but a lot of EV OEMs do a really good job ensuring delivering consistency. So I think it's a question of you taking a test ride and ensuring those specs remain that way for at least 30, 40 minutes of driving. I think within 20 minutes of driving, you'll find out if something's wrong, if there's inherently a gap between the claim and the performance. So I always ask everyone, test ride for 20 minutes before you buy an EV. The second thing you should look out for is, does this seamlessly fit into your existing lifestyle with respect to the charge claims? If you're buying a two-wheeler or a passenger four-wheeler, do you have dedicated parking? And can you set up a charger for yourself at home? And will your apartment complex allow you? There's a good chance most apartment complex now start allowing EV charging. But I think it's a question of, do you have dedicated parking for your vehicle? Either at home or at office. And what's your average travel like? Are you doing office home 80% of the time? Definitely buy an EV, because you know the 20% of the time you need to go somewhere, you even buy an Uber and get going. I think the problem that we are looking to solve for India is probably not the top 10%. It's probably all of India, right? The concept of let's park at home and charge at home is not true for all of India, right? A lot of people who buy passenger vehicles, very expensive passenger four wheelers, continue to park on the road, right? And if you look at the commercial vehicles in the logistics space, 100% they do not park in dedicated parking or organized parking. In fact, park under flyovers, under a random piece of lot, and they don't even park in the same spot every night. So, for a large part of India, recharge overnight at home is not feasible, right? Second problem is India is also price sensitive with respect to its products. So, if you look at a US and Europe market with respect to India, the average price point is almost 3 to 4x lower here, right? Maybe in the passenger vehicle or in the commercial vehicle. Mm-hmm. Right. And the rupee per kilometer that you want to spend, either again passenger vehicles or logistics, again is far lower. So India can't afford large batteries, right? The rest of the world is focusing on, hey, can I give you a larger and larger battery? That's the battery, 500 kilometers, 600 kilometers, 700 kilometers, recharge at home overnight. That's the model the rest of the world is working on. But India can't afford a large battery because all of us are buying the same cells, right? So we're all paying the same dollar per kilowatt. So a larger battery means the upfront cost significantly higher, the monthly EMI significantly higher, and just doesn't make TCO sense anymore. So India needs much smaller batteries that can be topped up more often on a public infrastructure, which is get in, get out, and keep going, and recharge whenever you feel like, pay as you go model. I mean, we love our prepaid model, right? We love our 5 rupee top ups on prepaid, cellular prepaid. So when the cellular guys came to India, they had to completely reinvent and rethink for India on how to create products. I think there's a similar problem with EVs as well. You can't cut, copy, paste a model that works for the rest of the world for India. And I think that's what we're focusing on, is simplifying energy for India has its unique challenges. And hence, we are forced to innovate and build products for India. And how do we do this? We do this through a concept called impedance management. So every cell has something called impedance. It's sort of the chaos that's within the cell that prevents the cell from accepting energy. And if you continue stressing this, so charging a cell is like taking a stone up the hill, right? You're increasing the potential energy of the cell, right? It's like sending the cell to the gym. It does not want to make that journey, right? You'll get away very easily on the dry side. You can give your vehicle to a racer. He can push your vehicle on a racetrack. The worst thing that will happen is your battery will heat up, your vehicle will slow down. But you won't actually degrade your cells. So driving is very, very lenient on the cell. 80% of your cell damage happens while charging. And that's because today chargers and batteries don't really understand each other. And chargers sort of force feed batteries more energy than they can handle, right? Sort of like force feeding a baby, right? And it really causes a lot of stress, creates a lot of damage. And so the simple way out has always been, hey, let's not stress the cell. Let's just go really slow with charging. So let's do a 8-hour charging or a 4-hour charging time.
Interesting. Right?
That's what we're sort of flipping that assumption on its head. What we've realized is you can actually fast charge a cell, but you can't just do it blindly. You sort of really need to understand what's happening inside a cell. So you can fast charge it, and you can, of course, take the required breaks when necessary to ensure you're not stressing it out and you're not creating any sort of damage. And that happens by our ability to understand what's happening inside a cell with respect to impedance buildup at an anode or a cathode level. And hence, we're able to sort of use our advanced sensing, the algorithms that go along with it, for us to make better decisions about charging, right? So think of it as I mean, we started off at EV with a very analog system in 2008, 2009. They got very digital in 2013, 2014. They got a little smarter by 2018. What we're doing is really taking it, making it way, way smarter. So we can take the existing cells and then rapid charge them in 15 minutes without damaging them. So most cells can last 3,000 cycles if you do a good job. It's just that because chargers don't understand that, cells today, they end up damaging them within 1,000 cycles. So we're not extending life. We're just giving you the life that the cells have in them.
Should have,
but we're also
right.
doing it while rapid charging.
Right. I mean, I'm very thankful for the 12th class physics I read because I can pick up some of the things that you mentioned here. But a little more on the technology here then. Is there a precedent for something like this, let's say outside of India or anywhere else, where a charging system like this has been attempted or has been successful? Essentially, what I'm asking is, where did you draw your, vision from for this? You know, that we should perhaps look at the technology side of this, really go inside the cell and study it and then start to solve it going outwards. So where were you coming from when you were thinking of this technology? And then how does, you spoke about impedance and things like that, that you would reduce it significantly. How would it happen though? And also, is this technology then patented already with Exponent Energy?
Right. So let's start with why, right? I mean, the why is very obvious, right? I mean, if you can recharge your EV like you refuel, that solves a whole bunch of problems. Right. So the product market need is very obvious. Right.
Right.
But rapid charging has been around for 13 years. Right. It's not new. The first rapid charging vehicle was built in 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. There are cells called LTOs, there are cells called supercapacitors that have been around for a really long time. The problem with, and they've allowed you to rapid charge your vehicle in 10 minutes, in 15 minutes, even in 5 minutes, actually. Right. The problem is these cells are very, very, very expensive. Right, they're almost 3 to 5x more expensive on a dollar per kilowatt hour basis than your regular cell. They're also very bulky. The energy density is almost 1/3 to 1/4, which makes it 3 to 4 times heavier, making them very, very unscalable. Right, so you've generally seen a lot of rapid charging pilots happen in Europe, in Japan, using these cell technology, specifically state government funded projects, right, like local buses, etc., where you can afford really heavy cost structures. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's a scalable solution, which is why you've never seen rapid charge scale.
Sure.
I think the question we ask ourselves is, can we take existing cells? Because saying I'm going to take a new cell and manufacture it and get it to scale is multi-billion dollar problem. Because cell production is not a batch. You can't produce cells in batches. You have to set up a really large cell production line and produce cells at really large scale to ensure that dollar per kilowatt hour drops down.
But Arun, what about a supercharger network that a Tesla sets up, in its markets? Again, we're talking about fast charging. It is done at scale wherever it is done.
So it's a time to charge, right? So our approach was focused for India, and I think coming to why the rest of the world and why maybe no one's really looking at it is because I don't think anyone else needs it, right? If you look at Tesla, if you look at any battery, there are a couple of parameters. There is energy density, power density, cycle life, and cost. These are the four metrics you must generally balance out, right? Energy density is how much range you can pack in for every kg of battery, and power density is how much power, which means both how quickly can you charge it, how quickly can you discharge it for every kg, and of course cycle life and cost. So in general physics, you have to trade off some amount of energy density if you want more power density, right? Which is not a great optimization function for passenger vehicles. Because in passenger vehicles, you care about aesthetics, you care about ergonomics, you care about weight. You really want to pack in the most range into the vehicle.
Right.
So if you look at Tesla, your charge times are 45 to 1 hour for the full charge, right? Because they've optimized for energy density and not power density. Because it makes sense for that market. Only 10% of the time do you actually charge in a public charging ecosystem when you own a passenger vehicle. 90% of the time you're charging at home, right? So you're okay with a slow charging. You'll charge. And when you're doing that public charging once in a while, it's an emergency charging or you're on a highway, you're going to get some food. So 40 minute charging is not too bad, right? But
this is a solution that can't work for India because bigger batteries is not something that we should blindly look at, because the cost factor then would limit access for a lot of other people. So you need to optimize charging instead for smaller batteries.
Exactly, because there's no place to charge at night and the cost structure, both those reasons, right? So which is why we fundamentally have to prioritize power density in India, not energy density. So one of the drawbacks in our batteries very openly is that we are a little bulkier, right? But then, for example, in the commercial vehicle space, there's enough volume, enough weight to sort of play this. So it's a market that very openly accepts our technology, right? And the interesting fact is, in India, 70% of our energy consumed on the roads is by the commercial vehicles, right? It's very different from the US. In the US, 70% of the on-road energy consumed is by the passenger vehicles, the four-wheelers. Right. So India is a very different market, needs very different things. And we're chasing a very different metrics than what the rest of the world needs.
Right. Interesting. You know, the last question I asked you was about, you know, whether this technology then is patented to you, or if it's not a technology per se, but a solution that you would be offering. So you don't need to look in that direction yet.
No. So we are looking at patents. There are a ton of patents that we want to file. It's just a question of finding bandwidth with our team.
Sure.
But what we're doing is very hard. So I'm very confident, very hard for anyone to copy it. But having said that, it's not like
Right.
I have my own views on patent law, outdated. But so on with respect to impedance management, we are not the first people in the world to be doing it. Right. People have done this in the lab for some time, but there's a lot of patentability in how we are approaching it. Respect to cost and scalability. People have always done it in a lab. People have had to use very expensive equipment to pull off rapid charging of a single cell. Right. But like your ECG machines went from this really bulky thing in the hospital to, you know, now on your wrist, right? Similarly, that's the sort of technology that we build, which is all that equipment now comes down to a small BMS that goes into the vehicle that's cheap and scalable. The second thing is people have always been able to do this at a single cell. Your cell phone, for example, is a single cell application. So is many power tools that you own. So people have been able to rapid charge those. But a vehicle generally has hundreds or thousands of cells. So people have never been able to rapid charge multiple cells in parallel. Again, that's a key piece of technology that we've cracked. So impedance management is not new, but a lot of the how is new. And I would think of that more of productization and commercialization patents.
Right. So, you know, to that point, you are a product person and you have been with Aether. And, you know, like you mentioned that you were sort of lonely in this journey when you were starting up and you were making an electric two-wheeler. It wasn't at scale first. It wasn't across the country first. You know, the kind of players that you are seeing now come up, you know, they're talking about unprecedented scale in EVs, you know, at least of the sort that we have seen in the country. So it's very encouraging for me also to see that the ecosystem piece is also being thought of by people like you. So from your experience, you know, building product at Aether, and, you know, from what you're looking at, you know, in terms of the development of the EV ecosystem going on currently, you, of course, highlighted what the gap was, and Exponent Energy, of course, with Exponent Energy, you're going to sort of attempt to fix that. But what else would you think are the gaps ecosystem-wise that we are perhaps not addressing as much? For two-wheelers particularly, you know, almost overnight, you know, you would blink and there'd be another upstart, you know, who's manufacturing two-wheelers now, which is true, it's happening. But, you know, things like even safety, for instance, are not conversations that we are having in parallel. You know, that's why I mentioned that when one goes out to buy these vehicles, of course, you know, you get instant torque, the throttle, it feels very exciting, you know, and you come back home and you feel very satisfied with what you've driven for 10 minutes. But the problem of keeping that vehicle with you and integrating it with your life, and generally the impact it's having on, you know, the larger ecosystem, even the economy, I would say, environment, for instance, is a big picture, you know, sort of piece I believe that we're not thinking of as much. To your mind, what are those gaps that we have not addressed as much? And what does a product also need to do to accentuate, you know, some of its offerings and go beyond things like, I don't want to say gimmicky, because it, you know, it is important to build an exciting product. But, you know, a product that can also sustain and sort of build this market out, because it is a very nascent space. The reputational risks of not doing this right are high. What are some of the things you think should also be, you know, the EV ecosystem should also be solving for in parallel?
No, absolutely. I think the gimmicks are bad, right? I think you need to drop the gimmicks. Start selling honest products. Yeah. I think people will. I've personally seen this at Aether. Being honest, selling good products. Everyone will complain about price and everything, but eventually people will love it. People will buy it.
Right. I think
we should build the gimmicks. India's a smart market, right? People know what they buy. I think gimmicks only create short-term buzz. But yeah, but anyway, so on the ecosystem story, I think a couple of problems that we need to solve. Firstly, is on supply chain. We're still very heavily dependent on supply chain. For every key component of the EV, may it be the motor with respect to the permanent magnets that we need inside it, or the cells by itself, either from China, Korea, or Japan. And this is not a problem, obviously, startups can pick up. But of course, there are larger companies in India who are getting into cell manufacturing. But I think we really need to accelerate that program. India, for example, is primed to go start building LFP cells, right? The sort of cobalt and manganese requirement for this is far lower. I think India will most probably bet on LFP cells, my personal opinion. Tesla has also moved to LFP cells. So LFP cells actually around the world have become better. So I think it's a great bet for us to start looking at. A lot of startups working on the motor piece, a lot of startups looking at switch reluctance motors. These are motors that do not have the permanent magnets, purely coil-based motors. So suddenly, you can now make these motors in India with 100% local supply chain. So that's great. And if that cracks, which means the cost of the motor will further drop and it can be completely made in India. So that's a very exciting piece. And I'm very closely seeing how that plays out. Third piece is, I think, on EV financing. A lot of people are approaching EV financing in a very conventional manner. But the thing with EVs is the brands are new. There is no second-hand market for you to depend on if the guy doesn't pay you. So how you approach EV financing must... But what you do have is a lot of data, live data from the vehicle to understand what's really happening under the hood. You have the ability to track the vehicle much better, right? And you have a complete life understanding of the motor, of the battery, etc. So what India needs to do is probably start looking at a lot. And there are a lot of startups coming up in this space. But I think and recently the government has also looked at incentivizing banks to start financing EVs. So that's a solid... Right.
And within government agencies itself, you know, they are speaking of things like carbon credits and, some really advanced financial engineering, I think, were not things that an EASL, for instance, earlier, you know, which was putting out these large sort of tenders, was looking at. But I do think that, you know, that sort of thought process has also kicked in. And,
I think the government has done a fantastic job. If anyone sits in, everyone always wants to have complaints, so everyone always says things. But I think really at this point, no one can complain anymore about the government's push for EVs. They've just had so much demand. Yeah. Now it's just a question of a whole bunch of us in the ecosystem getting together and doing our job. And that's about it.
Interesting. So Arun, then I have to ask you that, for all the time we've spent talking about the technology, when do we see, a solution from Exponent Energy, or how do we see it deployed in a real world sense? What sort of a solution or a product would you start off with so that, some of your solutions can also start, being put to the test? And then how soon do you see that happening?
So we test a lot ourselves right now. So we've now clocked 1,000 cycles of rapid charging, right, on some of our batteries. Today, when you buy a battery, you don't get more than 100 cycles of test data. So we actually provide everyone 1,000 cycles of test data. And in 1,000 cycles, we've lost less than 4%, 4 to 5%. Today, in the industry, you lose 20% with slow charging for 1,000 cycles. So we've sort of proven the 3,000 cycle life already, right? What we do is we test at a cell level, at a module level, at a full pack level. We also test on the road. And we're now moving towards a place where we are testing in the field with partners, right? And I think we believe in testing a lot before we sort of launch a product. So we are doing that. Sometime early next year, you will start seeing a soft pilot rollout in Bangalore, where we will have charging stations and vehicles deployed in the field. The space that we get best interest, incoming interest from, is also in the commercial vehicle space. It's a no-brainer. Really want to go electric, but they've got the least adoption today because of all the energy related issues. And we're a great product market fit for anyone in the commercial vehicle space. and the amount of energy that consumes.
Question. I mean, apologies to cut you off, but that begs the question that how many electric commercial vehicles do we even have in the country right now? I may be ignorant.
There are 30 plus OEMs. There are 30 plus
right.
OEMs in the
country. We're talking about the small commercial vehicles, right? The three-wheel commercial vehicle, that sort of thing.
Three-wheeler, there are also four-wheeler now, guys who are looking at Tata Aces. There are guys building really large commercial vehicles as well, like 40-tonner, 50-tonner, 60-tonner. So across the spectrum of commercial vehicles, I mean, of course, you have two-wheelers as well. But across the spectrum of commercial vehicles, maybe cargo or passenger, you already have many startups. There are 30-plus commercial vehicle options you can buy in the market right now.
And I think there's a great government push also, like with the state governments, particularly like in Delhi, for instance. I know that they do view this as low hanging fruit, and it's something that they would electrify first instead of thinking of cars and even two wheelers, three wheelers. So you're right to point that out, but I was just wondering, because I haven't seen those many on the roads yet. But it's great they're thinking about the charging system alongside rolling out a largish fleet, and then wonder what do we do with this.
So the number of vehicles are already, I think, for example, in Bangalore, you walk around, you're already starting to see deliveries happen on these commercial vehicles, electric commercial vehicles. So it's no more a question of, hey, where are they? I think the question of scale, again, I said this, 0 to 1 is done. So everyone's piloted commercial vehicles, everyone's convinced about the drive side, the performance side. But today, if I want to run a electric commercial vehicle, I need to find my own parking. I need to find my own dedicated spot to recharge it. I can only run this vehicle in one shift against a diesel vehicle, which I can run 2-3 shifts. So these are the problems that sort of prevent the complete conversion of the fleet to electric. But it's a question. I think it's a zero. I think it's sort of a step function. I think once you solve for the problem, you've got to immediately have a lot more people adopt. So the adoption might be much higher in the two-wheeler space today. But I think once you solve for it, the commercial vehicle space will actually go electric first. In fact, ahead of the two-wheeler space.
Right. So you were mentioning that to begin with, the commercial vehicle market is something that you find attractive, and a pilot should roll out in Bangalore to start with.
Yeah. Exactly. And then we're also looking in Delhi. These are the two large markets that are very logistics heavy. We are in these two markets. The network that we're setting up is common. So once the network we set up can charge, obviously, a passenger two-wheeler, a four-wheeler, or, of course, a commercial vehicle. But I would say the battery integration we're doing is far. We're working far more closely with commercial vehicle OEMs to start with. And then we'll sort of scale up from there.
Right. And, while, of course, you'll work with OEMs, how have your conversations with the government also been? Because, again, they will have to play a critical role in this as well. From what I hear, just setting up a charging station requires a whole bunch of permissions from the government. So anyone who's just trying to do it and perhaps not at scale, just to see how this goes, also has to do a lot of back and forth with the government. So I think that's also one element of this process that one needs to simplify. How have your interactions been then, with government agencies and policymakers? And what sort of support have they sort of promised to extend to you?
I think at a national level, it's very clear and things have been eased out. Even at a state level, I think the directives are very clear to make setting up charging stations far easier. I think the question of, a lot of execution muscle falling in place to actually make it really easy. Having said that, setting up a charging station is very easy compared to, like, say, setting up a fuel pump, right? Because if you set up a fuel pump, you need 14 to 15 government agency approvals. With setting up a charging station, you only need one. You don't need that much land, right? There's no safety issue, right? So it's not like your charging station has to be on a main road with so much area, etc. Right? So setting up a charging station is far easier and far more scalable. In fact, the problem until now on charging station has not been the government side. The problem is charging stations don't make money, right?
They don't. Another thing is that I don't think OEMs are looking for them to make money either. I have so many OEMs very candidly tell you it's just a marketing expense for us. We have them because we need to, them because we need to put it on a map on our website. Maybe next to a Kirana store, nobody knows it exists, but it's there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's true, right? And that's true for a lot of the vertically integrated place. I mean, that's what Tesla did, that's what we did at Aether, that's what Ola's doing, that's what Tata's doing in some sense. And it makes sense for that market. It's, again, it's a top 10% market. You can lose money on the charging station to make money on the vehicle. But I think for the larger, and I would call that a more of an Apple approach of doing everything yourself. But I think for the larger market to go electric, I don't think every OEM will necessarily go set up their own charging network. And if you really want to achieve scale and sustainability, the charging station's got to make money. You need people lining up to buy your charging station and set it up. Right? There's got to be demand.
Right, right.
The problem comes out of charge time. Today, if you take 8 hours to charge a vehicle, you can only sell energy to 2 or 3 vehicles a day. With rapid charging, now you can sell energy to 70 vehicles a day on the same piece of land. So suddenly, charging stations make a lot more money. And I think, again, that's one of the reasons why I'm focusing on rapid charging.
Well, that's amazing to know, Arun. And I think this is a product and a solution waiting to explore. And I'm sure we'll hear about it when that happens. So all the very best to you. And I'll keep my eyes peeled for your pilot rollout next year, you said? Early next year.
Early next year.
Awesome. I can see some of that.
Yeah, welcome to our office before that to check it out in person before that.
Amazing. So I'll definitely come back to you for that promise, and hopefully we can make it happen sooner than later. But for now, thank you very much, Arun, for taking the time and speaking to me. It's a conversation which has opened up, a lot of food for thought for me, and I'm sure for everyone who's listening in as well. So again, all the very best, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Alicia. It's wonderful being here.
Thank you, Arun. Thanks. Lovely talking to you. Thank you so much.
Same here. Bye-bye.